It's got to do with the fall over truth and April path and part of it. Right? So, in the beginning, actually, the Buddhas were only preaching to monks. And they preach to monks is when you start to have rules and teaching the monks how to live a proper life so that they will lead, they will just bring them to enlightenment. So that the monks can get enlightened. And so in the beginning, these preachings are for that purpose. And from there, the Buddha starts setting up certain procedures, certain principles for the monks to follow. And eventually, as the movements grew, then they start to make rules because people are different. Right? Those people who came in may not be people who are so interested in Buddhism, but more because they want to know what the Buddha said and they become a monk. Right? So, there's a time when the Buddha start to set up rules for those people who break the sort of conventions of the Buddhist monks. Now, when the Buddha passed away, of course, later on, then the Buddha started to preach to lay people as well. And when he preached to lay people, by the time he preached to the lay people, he has already got an attendant called Ananda. You heard about Ananda? When you see the Buddha, some temples, you see the Buddha image, and then beside that two persons. One is Ananda, and the other one, I don't know which one is it, but Ananda is always following the Buddha. Whenever the Buddha is invited to give preaching, Ananda would be there. And he got a promise from the Buddha. He says, if I am not there and you preach, you come back, you've got to preach to me. So Ananda has heard almost all the preaching. The preaching to the monks and the preaching to the lay people. And he is supposed to be the disciple who has heard a lot. In Chinese, they call it Tuo Wen. Heard a lot. So, and when the Buddha passed away, Ananda was the one who, through his memory, he recited the whole thing, what the Buddha taught during his lifetime, which he remembered. But Ananda didn't say it's his teachings. He says, it's what I heard, the Buddha's teachings. So that's why in the suttas you always see, thus have I heard. It means that's what Ananda was saying, I heard. And in the suttas, usually they tell you the background of it, where the Buddha was, you know, who they are, and so on, and what brought forward the preachings of the Buddha. Right? And when the Buddha has passed away, the monks had a very have a meeting, have a sort of a conference, as you call it nowadays, right, where they standardize the whole teaching, and that's called the First Council. And there, they standardize the rules, the Vinaya, the monastic rules, and then they standardize also the other teachings as the suttas. And for a long time, for a couple of hundred years, there's only these two, suttas and Vinaya. Until later, when the Buddhism expanded and attracted a lot of these scholars and philosophers, then they have a third collection called the Abhidhamma. So when you talk about the Pali Canon, it's made up of these three sections, or the three pitakas. Right? Pitaka means baskets. They collect, collect, and collect. So, the first basket, they call it the Vinaya Pitaka. That is for the monks, the rules for the monks. Right? They tell the monks, you know, certain things you cannot do, what caused it, and all these things. And what are the rules which you cause your expulsion, the rules which you cause punishment, and all these things. They are rules. Actually, they can be considered be laws of the Buddhist monks. Then the second one is called the Sutta Pitaka, which is all the collected discourses of the Buddha through the time when he started preaching until the time he passed away. And the third one, of course, is the Abhidhamma Pitaka, where the subject dealt with are the Buddhist philosophy and the Buddhist psychology. Sometimes we teach a lot from the Abhidhamma, but it can be very, very stifling if you use it because it's very, very academic. So, for the most of Buddhist followers, I think we should pay our attention to going to the suttas. Right? The suttas. Rather than Vinaya, it's got nothing to do with us, it's the monk's rules. Abhidhamma is something which has got to do with a lot of things. It's very, very fine part of philosophy and fine psychology. So in this Sutta Pitaka, it's divided into five different sections. Right? We call them the Nikaya. Right? Nikaya. And in the Sutta Pitaka, we got five Nikayas. One is the Digha Nikaya, which is the longer saying. The Majjhima Nikaya, which is the middle length saying. And the Samyutta Nikaya, which they call it the kindred saying. Anguttara Nikaya is arranged according to numerical order. And Kudaka Nikaya, which is a collection of everything. Everything is inside there, which is not included in the first four. Right? So they find that a lot of stories, tales, legends, and all these things are in Kudaka Nikaya. Now the important ones, important teachings are actually found in the first four. The Digha, Majjhima. Now Digha means the longer discourses. Right? It's longer than the others. And the Majjhima Nikaya is the middle length discourses. Samyutta Nikaya is called the kindred discourses, which they group up in, one subject is grouped into one whole section, another subject is another section, and so on. They call it Samyuttas. Right? For example, when you talk about the five aggregates, they call it the Khanda Nikaya, the Khanda Samyutta. So you open up the thing, they all about the five aggregates are there. You can say it's a sort of a reference book to us. And Anguttara Nikaya is the numerical order. Now you know when you study Buddhism, you got Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, and what else? Five aggregates, the five, whatever, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, right? All these numbers, they're all arranged to these numbers. You can say it's a glossary of Buddhist thinking in numbers. Right? It's okay. I remember, okay, it's a four. Four what? You look down there. In fact, there's one four, other than Four Noble Truths, there's so many fours there. Right? So, the Anguttara Nikaya is used for reference, the Sunyata Nikaya is used for studying things in groups. And of course, the Kudaka Nikaya, you want to know about stories and legends and all this, go to Kudaka Nikaya. Very interesting. They tell you about the past life of the Buddha, they tell you about how one monk met a king and they've got these arguments and all these things. But the main and most important part of the teachings is found in the longer discourses, the middle length discourses, and the kindred discourses. Now in this tree is listed nearly all the Buddha's teachings. Of course, Anguttara Nikaya is quite important because whatever is not listed there is also not listed in the first three, is also listed in this one. So as you go on, time goes on, the way, you know, instead of keeping up memory, the study actually in early days, the monks do not write out things. So the first council, the first meeting of the monks to standardize the teachings, take part sometime a couple of months after the Buddha's death or the Buddha's passing away. But it's being made to oral tradition, and it's only about 200 or 300 years after the making of the oral tradition that they are being written down. Right? And the first ones, possibly the first one to be written down completely, will be done in Sri Lanka, right? In the language which is brought over by Venerable Mahinda, called Pali. Right? So you can say that the Pali canon is the earliest canon which is the most complete. Right? Everything is there. In fact, all whatever teachings of the Buddhism is there. There are other, of course, other scriptures as well from different traditions. Because by then, Buddhism has split up into different traditions and they have been kept in different languages. But they are not complete. So for us, modern day people, if you want to find a more complete references, we go into the Pali scripture. And also in the 19th and the early 20th century, scholars from England started to translate the Pali scriptures into English. Right? Before that, you got a bit of translation here and there, sometimes in German, sometimes in French, to suit the different scholars. But the most comprehensive translation is in English, is done in Sri Lanka sometime in the late 19th and the early 20th century. And one of them, those translators, who translated, I think the Samyutta Nikaya is a Tasmanian. So, and for us, we want to do any reference in a very comprehensive way, we go to, into this English translation of the Pali Canon. The earliest one is the translation is done by the Pali Text Society in London. And it's very, very scholarly. They use different versions from different countries. Thai, the Burmese, and the Sri Lankan version. And then they do all the checks and counter-checks. And you can say it's very, very accurate. So going back to the sutta is normally they are discourses of the Buddha. Right? Discourses means the Buddha giving a preaching. For example, somebody might come and see the Buddha, you know, asking a question, and the Buddha will answer. And that's what they call a discourse. And because Ananda heard it, so he remembered, so he recited the whole thing during the first council, and it became a standardized part of the teaching. Now, the Buddha preached for 45 years, as the popular tradition, and according to this one, you can see that the Buddha passed away on his 80th year. He passed away according to the popular belief, passed away on the same day as he was born. That's on Visakh. Now, when you look into the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, it's called the Great Passing. Mahaparinibbana, the Great Passing of the Buddha. That means, of course, you know, the Buddha being a great teacher, we can't say he died. It's not polite. So we say the Great Passing. And of course, being a Buddha, he didn't pass away to the next life. That's what people believe. So we call it, he came into Nibbana. And what is Nibbana? No one is really clear about it. Until he reached the stage of Nibbana. So anyway, the Buddha lived for 80 years, and this Mahaparinibbana Sutta actually can be considered to be a historical record of the last days of the Buddha. Now, they say the last days, but they didn't exactly say how long it is. But from the thing itself, you can see roughly when it is, because there's a reference of a rains retreat. Like, as you know, the monks is encouraged to go into rains retreat. When it's raining, the Buddha and the monks don't travel. So he spent the rain retreat somewhere, and then after that, slowly he went downhill, and then he died. So then somewhere there, it said the Buddha said also that this is his 79th year. So you can say, okay, if the rain retreats happened in this 79th year, then he could have died in the 80th year. So that confirms that the Buddha died in this 80th year. Right? In this Parinibbana Sutta, as you say, we can use it as a historical reference. We can use it also to study the messages the Buddha left behind. It's the messages that I'm going to talk to you. There's quite a lot of it. And it also reflects the sphere and the influences of the Buddha, the area which the Buddha is influential, and his teachings and activities of his disciples. You read them, you can see this. They reveal to you all these sort of things. And he also can reveal to you the customs and traditions of the Indians in that place at the time. How, what did they do? Now, it's in one of the chapters here, when the Ananda went to tell the Malas that Buddha is dying. Malas are very keen follower of the Buddha. Right? They are dying. They say, oh, the Malas start to wail and then pull the hair. So that's how the Indians mourn, isn't it? Well, you can see, this is the way it is. You can see that when the Indians, how the custom of the Indians at the time, when they invite holy people to the houses. Right? We always invite monks to the house for dana. So how do they do it? They don't say, hey, come over to my house, or send, like we all here, send invitation card or send by email and all this. No, there's no such thing. What they do is, they go there, and then the custom is, you keep the respected person onto your right hand side. That's why, you know, if you go around the pagodas, walking around the pagodas, Bodhi tree and all this, if you go to the temple, we always keep the, go clockwise. Keep the venerated object to the right. So when you go and invite somebody, you see him sitting down there, don't walk this way. You walk this way and then sit in front of him. And then say something now, politely, you say that I would like to invite you to dinner tomorrow, or to lunch tomorrow, because they don't eat dinner. And then if the Buddha always respond by three silences. In right, the first time he kept quiet, the second time he kept quiet, the third time he kept quiet, it means it's the positive. It means he agrees to it. Right? In fact, the Buddha, the monks and Buddhas don't say, yes, I like to go to your house. Never say that. So when he didn't answer for three times through his silence, then it means he's accepted the invitation. So you can go home and prepare your food. And how do they offer food to the Buddhas, to the monks? Inside there, they tell you they give soft and hard food. What do you mean soft and hard food then? That means solids and liquid. Right? Giving food with the sauce that's liquid, giving the food like egg or meat or whatever is hard food. Right? So, it's the way they do it. And then, how do they know that when the Buddha has finished eating? Or the monks have finished eating? He says, when they take away their hands from the bowl. Again, you study the Indian customs of the day. Right? So there are many, many customs. And also the funeral custom of the Buddha. Because here, they tell you when the Buddha passed away, how they conducted the funeral. And in these two, you can see that the Buddha actually taught human things rather than supernatural things. So it proves to us that the Buddha not only existed as a human being, but his teachings are for human beings. And the other one is, you can see the nature of the Buddha, the loving kindness and the compassion the Buddha has for people. 80 years old. You know how old is 80 years old? 80 years old, you are no longer young people. Right? For you all to walk 10 miles is nothing. Or is it something sometimes, right? But for the 80-year-old to carry a bowl, walking with a middle-aged man for 10 miles or 10, 15, 16 kilometers, how far it is? Yet, he walked from one community to another, to another, to another. Right? The area of his influence is actually quite big. It comes to a few thousand square kilometers. Right? In that area there, if you look at it, part of Bihar, part of Bengal, is under the influence of the Buddha. It's got a lot of disciples there. So he goes from one community to another before he died, 80-year-old man. And why did he have to walk? He's so influential, he got to tell the king, I need a chariot. Then the king will give the chariot. But because of his compassion and loving kindness to animals, he wouldn't ride on the animals. That's why he did not go riding on a chariot. Right? So you can see that compassion and love for not only human beings, because he wants to make sure that everybody knows his teachings well before he dies. And of course, in this book, actually he senses that he's going to die. Right? Because he got sick, and during his sickness, then he says, oh, it's not going to be long before I pass away. So I want people to be sure of what I taught them in the past. And in this collection too, in this sutta also, you'll find that all those important teachings are being mentioned in here. Of course, I know a lot of people just quote one or two parts of the sutta, but there are a lot more than that. What the Buddha taught, and what he keep on reminding those people of his teachings. Right? And whatever appears here can be found in other parts of the other Nikayas, either in the long sayings or in the middle sayings or in the kindred sayings, right? In detail. Right? Now the Mahaparinibbana started about a year before the Buddha passed away. And it came, the story is that a king wanted to invade the next country. his neighboring country. And but he wants to find the views of the Buddha, whether it's nice to invade the country or not. I don't know why he wants to do that, because the Buddha is very peaceful, isn't it? The Buddha tried to stop people from invading others if he can. So he sent two of his ministers to go to the to see the Buddha and try to find out. And that's what the Buddha said without telling them directly. Now actually, the King Ajatasattu of Magadha is trying to invade the Vajrayans. Right? Vajrayans are neighboring people. So the Buddha knew possibly the intention of those two ministers. And while Ananda was fanning him, he talked only to Ananda. He says, you know, how, because the Vajrayans following certain principles and practices, therefore they will prosper and will not decline. He said that for the ears of the two ministers. So he says, why? He says, because they hold regular and frequent assemblies. That means they meet regularly and then this to discuss things. Right? Number two, they meet in harmony, they break up in harmony, carry on the business in harmony. Number three, do not authorize what has not been authorized, and do not abolish what has been authorized. That means they keep to the set principles and tradition. They honor, respect, revere, and salute the elders among them. The fifth one is, do not forcibly abduct other people's wives and daughters and compel them to live with them. Right? Which is a very common thing among the semi-barbarous tribes in India. They honor, respect, and revere and salute the Vajrayan shrines at home and abroad. Now, what do you mean by that? The Vajrayan shrines is not actually a temple. They are actually places where they meet, right? And then they discuss things, and then they do all the good deeds together. So they really honor them. That means they have got respect for things which are good. And of course, number seven, the last one, is the respect and welcome enlightened people. And because enlightened people will be there to teach them even further good things. So as long as they keep to these sort of things, this group of people will prosper and will not decline. That means if Ajatasattu tries to invade them, they will be very not successful. So now that's one thing. But the Buddha also taught the monk the same thing. He says, how can you prosper and not decline? They told him. The Buddha has got a long list of things to tell the people, the monks, that they cannot. If long as they keep to the rules, they keep to the respects, and then they have got loving kindness and all these things. There are three sections of them dealing with it. So if you read this one, I would recommend you to read this. You've got a copy in the library, and just take it and see. Just read it and find out for yourself what actually is meant by it. Now, after that, he started to remind people. This sort of things, the sort of things for monks to prosper and all this thing is something new. But he thought that since he's going away, he wants to make sure that everybody knew what he was teaching. So he talked to the monks according to this book on morality, concentration, and wisdom. It's a very common word that everybody use. Sila, Samadhi, Panya. Right? Now, what are these three then? These three actually reflects the Eightfold Path, the groupings of the Eightfold Path. Under morality, or the ethics, is right living, right livelihood, and right conduct, right livelihood, and right speech. Right? The right speech means don't tell lies and all this. That one is in your Eightfold Path, right? So whoever talks about Eightfold Path will talk about it. And what about concentration or mental culture? It's just the training of the mind. Right? It involves right effort, right concentration, and right mindfulness. And of course, wisdom, right understanding, and right thoughts. Right? So he reminded monks of this because that's a very the core of his teachings. It allows you to have a very good practice, and it makes the person, as what he says, from a very impure person to a pure person. From a person who is actually suffering in this world into a person who has reached enlightenment and not suffer anymore. Right? So that's the beginning of his teachings before he died. Then after that, he decided to go to the various communities. Right? As I told you, he walked with Ananda, one community to another, and stayed there for a while, to another community, another one, and another one. Until he reached the last community where he died. Right? He taught the same thing. Morality, concentration, and wisdom. And sometimes if the monks are doubtful about other aspect of teachings, he talk about it. Then they also have discussions whenever the monks have got doubts. Then there are also other things which he discussed other than these three. Right? The Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Number one is how, in a thing you can see, what Sariputta said about his views of his master. Right? How the main disciple view him as a Buddha. That means you can see that what came later when people start to put a lot of qualities of Buddha in is not right. That Buddha is, according to Sariputta, what he is. Right? Sometimes we think that the Buddha flies around. How many of you think that Buddha can fly? Can walk on water? Can do miracles? Can go up to heaven and teach his mother? That comes very late. Right? That comes very late. He talks of this Buddha is very, very different way as we think of the Buddha now. Right? We think of the Buddha as very sacred. Right? Actually, Sariputta talks of the Buddha as a human being who has changed himself into a Buddha rather than being born as a Buddha. And then that Buddha is a teacher who teaches all the good things rather than a godly figure who comes there and do all sorts of things. Right? Nowadays, a lot of Buddhists believe the Buddha can perform miracles. Right? When you're sick or getting bad luck, go and pray the Buddha. Right? Whereas here, it confirms to you that the Buddha is nothing more than a human being. And he teaches the good things to the human beings. Well, there's another one which is possibly an important one. Then, at one place called Patiligama, the Buddha taught not to the monks, but to the lay people. Like when he went to this little place called Patiligama, the lay people heard about him and invited him to lunch. So they all went prepared lunch for him, and then after lunch, usually the Buddha will give a discourse or a sermon. And then, of course, they tell you in this part here, it's chapter 122 and all this. He said the Buddha's custom is, on the day itself, the Buddha dressed, took his robes and bowl, and went to his monks to the rest house, right, where he washed his feet, the custom, went in and sat down facing east. That's why the temples, you find that in the temple, the Buddha always face east and sit west. Right? It's not because of feng shui, you know. It's because of tradition. Right? So, and the monks, having washed the feet, went in and sat down with the backs to the west wall facing east, and with the Lord sitting in front of them, Buddha here or the monks sitting behind. If you look at some paintings, they show you that. And the lay followers of Patiligama, having washed the feet, went in and sat down with the backs to the east wall facing west, and with the Buddha before them. So whenever you go, that is how the Buddha meets the people. And that's how sometimes in certain temples, that's how we face the Buddha as well. Right? When you sit down and meditate, the Buddha is always east facing west. Right? It's not because of luck, fortune or anything, but it's just our tradition that way. Then the Buddha taught him the five dangers of bad morality. Right? So he says the bad morality will bring you to a lot of things, and then you lose your property, you get a bad reputation, and then you're shy to meet people, And then you die confused, and when you die confused, you will be born in a bad state. So these are the things which he taught. And you can see at the time, people actually believe in after death, people believe in being reborn in a certain thing. And that's why the Buddha used this to teach them. Right? So, it says, if you have good morality, then what happens? Then you can put more careful attention to your affairs and you gain much wealth. Right? So you can see here, the Buddha is not against you making money, but make money in the proper manner. Right? So if one of the monks or a preacher come and tell you, don't make money because you are Buddhist, then don't have to listen to him, because the Buddha tell you, you must have good morality and you make money. Right? Have gains much wealth.
There's right livelihood, though, isn't there?
Pardon?
Right livelihood, one of the eightfold paths.
Yeah, yeah. You see, right livelihood is part of the morality.
So you can make money, but there's restrictions.
No, there's right livelihood is certain professions to avoid.
Okay, but once you don't avoid, you're an out. So yeah. You can make money.
No, as long as I don't cheat people, I work with my... Now, other suttas, the Buddha tell you, if the money earned by your sweat of your forehead, that is good money. Yeah? You labored for it, it's honest money. So that's why we are talking about being honest money. If I trade with you, okay, I'm going to make money from you, I let you know that, then I'm not cheating you. Okay?
I think the point I was making was that just you got right livelihood, so there should be no mystery about making,
but
the, how to make money.
Right livelihood means to avoid five professions which cause harm to others. That's all. Right livelihood doesn't mean that you don't make money. Understand?
I agree.
No. Right livelihood means to avoid five style of livelihood which cause problems to others. And that's all.
Others?
Yeah. So we talk about slave trading. Yeah? We talk about what others? Trading in poisons. Trading in arms, right?
Being a butcher.
Yeah, I mean, the Buddhist is being discouraged. It's not that they ban them from doing so. Right? It's discouraged. And anything which is other than these five, and you don't need to be honest with it, you don't cheat other people, because the other part of morality comes in. You got to be honest. You don't lie and all this. Right? So supposing I want to work with somebody, I say, okay, you know, I charge you $20 per hour, $30 per hour. You agree? Okay. Then I work for you. Then after that, you give me $30, that is rightful money. Right? Now, incidentally, you mentioned this. About 30 years ago, there's one clever lady who owned a restaurant came and talked to the Unibuds members. Unibuds, happened here. She says, oh, I've got a restaurant. Right? I've got flyers to put in letterbox. Those days, they put letterbox in the flyers. The flyers in the letterboxes. Right? So I want you to do it. Then the kids say, oh, why not? I charge you 9 cents, 9 cents per pamphlet. Right? And then you know what the lady said? You Buddhists are supposed to be compassionate, loving kindness. Why don't you do it for us for free? Right? Logical or not? So the young fellas came and see me. He said, Jim, blah, blah, blah. I said, go back and tell that lady, Buddhists are dumb, but not stupid. Okay, so you can see, it's rightful for us to make money. Right? If we don't make money, then where are we going to, what sort of resources are going to allow us to support the monks and nuns? Who is going to build the temple, isn't it? If every Buddhist is poor, then we can't afford the money, then nothing happens. So that's a very important thing. And in other parts of the teaching, the Buddha always talked to the lay people. Wealth is important. Right? Only thing is, when they make rules for the monks, then it's a very different thing. Right? And in this one, which is the Chinese version of the teaching the Buddha left behind, he told the monks, you cannot produce things, you cannot invest things, you can nothing. The monks and the nuns are not supposed to do that. Right? But he's preaching to the lay followers of Pataligama. So he talks about things in lay people's terms. Right? Now, the whole thing is, I find nowadays, sometimes a lot of preachers get confused. They are confused between the preachings to the monks and the preachings to the lay people. You can look at it, the Buddha actually has got two kinds of preaching. One is for the monks and one for the lay people. Right? And he preached different things to the monks because the monks are people who have made up their mind to want to reach enlightenment faster. Whereas lay people are there to support the monks. Therefore, they need to have a lot of economic activities. If we don't have money, then the whole Buddhist movement is going to collapse, isn't it? Who is going to feed the monks? And I've got one stupid monk in Taiwan. I'm sorry to mention the country. When somebody wants to become a monk, he's from a rich family. You know what he told the guy? He said, "I know your family has got a lot of money. You should throw all your things in the river." So sometimes, you know, people can resort to very funny things. So anyway, wealth, but wealth with good morality. We always associate wealth as something which is not good, which is wrong. There are certain wealth which is good, certain wealth which are not good. When, how do you derive from it? So your wealth is derived from a very good way, then so what? Okay, so you gain much wealth, then you get good reputation, morality and good conduct, which means people will trust you, right? And listen to you. And then wherever he approach people with confidence and assurance. And then when he dies, we die unconfused. And then of course, we'll be reborn in a good place. And that's how the Indians believe at the time. So after a while, the Buddha left and then went to other communities. So in other communities, you can see he accepted meals from lay disciples, like the disciples of Patalikama, and he reminded the others of the Four Noble Truths. This is again in the chapter 239. I'm sorry, I got to quote this one for you because I'm preaching from the Sutta. Chapter 2:2. So, telling you that this, what is suffering? What is the cause of suffering? What is the cessation of suffering? And what is the path leading to the cessation of suffering? Four Noble Truths. And that is what he left behind. And then there's another one which is very interesting. Ananda is very much of a very beautiful human being. He's very romantic, you know, that guy. And actually, he's just like us, very human being. He's human. And he's very curious. And during some periods, a few of the monks and nuns died. So he's being very curious. So he asked the monks and nuns, he says, Lord, so-and-so died, so-and-so died, so-and-so passed away. What happened to them? So the Buddha used the traditional method and say, oh, so and so practiced so well, he became enlightened and is gone. So and so became a once returner. So and so becomes a anagami or sandagami or whatever. And then so and so is a stream returner. They will all be enlightened within this 7 lifetime. Then Ananda was quite happy, but the Buddha told Ananda, I says, you are horrible. I say, you ask the things which are wearisome. I'm tired of telling you all these stupid things. So, you know, like all of us, we always speculate that when somebody dies, he might go for a better rebirth. The Buddha says, don't speculate. Because according to the Buddha's teaching, whatever rebirth you get is the sum total of your karma in this life, in this and the past life. Right? And nobody can tell you what it is. But unfortunately, a lot of Buddhists try to talk about these things. And that's why some teachings, you become very good in this life, next life you become very good. And what are you going to be? I'm going to be a rich man in the next life. I'm going to be a beautiful woman in the next life. Of course, sorry, I make a mistake. Then no Buddhist will aspire to become a woman in the next life because that's a superstitious belief among the a lot of Buddhists that the women cannot get enlightened. But the Buddha did not say so. It's just the way people presented it. Then one of the things the Buddha left behind is to teach us of the nature and the quality of the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. How many of you attended, ever go to a Theravadan service? Thai temples and all this? Okay. So, what do you all say when you do that? Iti piso, bhagava, arahan, sama sambuddho. You all know the meaning of it or not? It tells you the nine qualities of the Buddha. Right? So the Buddha, in this one, they left behind the nine qualities. Now, it's not the thing which somebody dreamt up, but it's what is recorded in the sutta. Right? And then he talk about the Dhamma, the quality of the Dhamma. What is so good about the Dhamma? And then quality of the Sangha, that the Sangha must be people of upright character. Right? No crooks to be found in among the monks and the nuns. Right? They must live according to certain standards. And that's why the Buddha sat behind the Vinaya. So, in this Parinibbana Sutta, Buddha mentioned these qualities. You can see it on page 241 of this book. Okay? And then, another one of the important thing he left behind is he preached mindfulness. Is a very, very important thing of mindfulness. And then, in this thing, he left behind a story also of a certain lady called Amba Pali. You ever heard of Amba Pali? He's a very beautiful woman. He happens to be one of the object of desire of a lot of men, and she's professional. It's what you call, in the crude terms, prostitution. And yet, the Buddha received the support of prostitutes. See, the Buddha doesn't discriminate people. Right? Of course, in this book, they didn't write the word prostitute, but they call it courtesan. Right? So it's a very nice word, nice way of saying that. Now, Amba Pali is a very strong devotee of Buddha. Right? And in this, there's a long story on it, in this book, and I would recommend you to read it. Right? If you think that the Buddha... In the Buddhist society, always suppress women. You do this, you know how much the women have got over a lot of people. Right? The story goes that the Amba Pali is rich. Right? She was rich because of being a courtesan. She earns a lot of money, so she got a place, you know, a park or something, which she allows holy men to stay. So Buddha went to stop there and. For a rest, and then Amba Pali heard about it, so she came in the chariot. You can see the Buddha. So, and then went to see the Buddha, and then talked to the Buddha. Listen to the Buddha's sermons, and then after that, invited the Buddha for lunch the next day. Right? So the Buddha again, she asked three times, and the Buddha remained silent three times. That means got it, and she is so happy. She on the way back. She met these warriors, the Lichavis. The Lichavis are a class of people, the warrior class of people, very much like the Buddha. The Buddha's, actually the Buddha's same caste as the Buddha. So these are all these young people, all these young princes and all noble people, they want to see the Buddha as well. But they met Amba Pali halfway, and then they stopped and say, "Amba Pali, why are you so happy?" He says, "Oh, I'm happy because Buddha accepted my invitation to come for food tomorrow." So you know, the young princess told him, he says, or the young nobleman, he says, "I'll pay you 100,000 gold, pieces of gold, for you to swap. We are going to invite the Buddha. Now, if you say that you invite the Buddha the next day and allow us the honor of having the Buddha tomorrow, then we pay you 100,000 pieces of gold." Amba Pali says, "If you bring me all the gold in Vasali, I'm not going to accept it either." So the people are disappointed, but they went to see the Buddha nevertheless. So when they see the Buddha, you know, the Buddha gave them a sermon, they're so happy. Then after that, they told the Buddha, "Can we invite you to lunch tomorrow?" Right? Even though they know that Ambapali has invited, hoping that the Buddha will pick them instead of Ambapali. So the Buddha says, no, because he didn't say silent this time. He says, no, Ambapali has invited me. Then next people say, so disappointed. You see, even the ordinary prostitute has won over the noble people. Right? So it shows you that our Buddhist teaching is not something which discriminates among different people. Right? So the story continues that Ambapali, the next day Ambapali gave the mule Buddha Buddha, and she was so happy that she donated the land to the Buddha. Okay. Then after that, he was very sick. Then, but in this chapter, he didn't tell you that he couldn't winch around, complain about his sickness. He was very resolute, and because of his mind, then the sickness got away. So this is one of a very good way of us to be very a very good way of teaching us how to cope with sickness. It doesn't mean that when you are sick you don't have medicine and all those things, but when we are sick, you got to see how much of the mental part we contribute to the sickness. So as long as you get rid of the mental part, then the sickness possibly will heal itself better. Now the other part of it is the Buddha talked about the way he taught. And he said that, I teach you without holding back any secrets. There are, in those days, teachers who teach, but they keep something behind for themselves. Or there are people who pick people and say, I'll teach you some special thing. They are called the esoteric teachings, like the Tibetans. The Buddha says, I don't teach people that way. Right, which means that it shows you that there are certain Buddhists later, after the Buddha, has changed the Buddhist way of teaching. The Buddha's teaching is open hand, teaches you everything that he knows, everything. And he teaches the same everything to high people, to low people. People who are very intelligent, he teaches the same thing. People who are stupid, he teaches the same thing. You find that? When he talks to the Brahmin, although he used a different language, but he's teaching the same thing. He talks about the Four Noble Truths. When he teaches to slave girls and all these things, he's talking the same Four Noble Truths in a very different way. And then, he did tell everybody that you all can become enlightened through the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. What is the Four Foundations of Mindfulness? Satipatthana. So it's very important that we also remember the Satipatthana Sutta and to follow the Satipatthana Sutta, because in the Satipatthana Sutta itself, the Buddha mentioned it as the direct path to enlightenment. And here the Buddha says everyone is ready to become enlightened through the four foundations of mindfulness. And in this also, they tell you about certain beliefs people entertain during the Buddha's time. They believe that when there's an all-enlightened Buddha, the earth will quake during different times of his life. Earthquakes happening. Like when he was born, there's earthquake. When he got enlightened, there's earthquake. When he does certain things, there's earthquake. 8 times during the life of a Buddha, there'll be earthquakes. But of course, this views to the belief of the people at the time. Then he also taught the 37 steps to enlightenment. He put it in a Pali word is Bodhipakkhiya Dhamma. Now it goes that way. 4 foundations of mindfulness, 4 right efforts, 4 roads to power, 5 spiritual faculties, 5 mental power, 7 factors of enlightenment, 8-fold path. So, and I told you this is like studying anatomy, or studying the different functions of the liver, isn't it? So all these things, and this 37 things, all will bring us to the enlightenment factor. Then on certain parts, he tell you how to confirm whether a teaching you hear is right or wrong. I can read this to you. Now, supposing if a monk were to tell somebody, he says, I've heard and received this from the Buddha's own lips. This is his teaching. This is the discipline. This is the master's teaching. Then you should neither approve nor disapprove his words. Don't accept or don't reject for the time being. Then, without approving or disapproving his words and expressions, should be carefully noted and compared with the suttas and reviewed in the light of the discipline. Right? Got to check, make counter check. When somebody make a statement, it's good that you have this book by you and then check through. Right? And then, if it's not conforming to it, then you know that it doesn't reflect the teachings of the Buddha and you should reject it. Right? So what it means, don't expect somebody to say something and you just listen to it and accept it as truth. Right? In the Kalama Sutta, the Buddha has talked about this as well. Whatever people teach you, whatever is written in the books, whatever comes from tradition, don't take it for granted. Test for yourself and find out for yourself. Right? So this is what the Buddha said in it. That means whenever you hear from somebody about teachings, then make sure that you understand it by referring through your suttas. That means the book of the suttas is very important. Now, what I noticed in the past is a very interesting thing. You know, every Muslim has got a copy of the Quran, isn't it? For those of you who come from Indonesia, you know, or Malaysia, every Muslim has got a Quran. And what does every Christian have? A Bible. What does Buddhist have? Every Buddhist? Nothing. Dharma talk, Dharma talk, pray, Dharma talk. So I would recommend you, if you are going to be very serious about your religion, invest some money to buy this book. If you don't have all of them, at least get these three. Digha Nikaya, Longer Discourses, Majjhima Nikaya, and the Anguttara Nikaya. They are very useful in guiding against on these things. Now, when I was younger, whenever somebody teach something, I always challenge them. I said, from which sutta are you teaching from? From which sutta do you get your reference from? Oh, if they say, oh, it's from my own mind, I say, no, in the case, I wouldn't accept it. If they come from a sutta, you will accept it. And it's a tradition of a lot of the Buddhist tradition that some of the very respectable monks, before they teach any Dhamma at all, they'll recite the sutta first. I did that in Australia once. I invited one of the Burmese monks. And then guess what? I asked him to talk to me about the preaching of the Buddha to Sariputta and Moggallana. And he came with his fan. You know the fan or not? Now, it's formal, and which is a very good thing. When he sat down, we all politely tell him, Bante, please preach to us this particular sutta. And he accepted by silence. Okay? Then he sat down, crossed his leg, put the fan in front of him so that you don't see his face and he can't see you. That is our Buddhist tradition. Why do we do that? Because he's not attached to you. I'm not attached to you. Whenever I'm talking, I'm attached to you. Right? Whereas if I put a fan in front of me, then I'm not attached to anybody. And what he did was to preach, was to recite the sutta in Pali first. Right? And he's a very, that in the case, he's a very responsible teacher. Then after he took away his fan, then he started two lines, then explained in English, two lines, explained in English, two lines, explained in English. And if he wants to refer to other suttas, he has got to mention it in Pali. Then he explains what is the meaning in Pali. I tell you, at the end of the teaching, only three of us stayed awake. But that is the right way of teaching. Because he teaches the thing straight from the books and not through his confused mind. All of us are confused. I'm confused sometimes as well. Right? If I don't have this as my reference, or when I talk to you, I don't have suttas as my reference, then I'm talking nonsense. Because we are all ignorant. Right? So it's very important that the sutta becomes our reference. Right? So If you've got the money, spend some money getting three of this, the three books. And then whenever somebody preach, go and check through the preachings. So this is what happens when you want to confirm what people teach is right or wrong. Then after that, there's a story about his last meal. His last meal, he went to a small little village, and there's a smith. I think he must be a iron smith, I think, by the name of Chunda. And Chunda gave him a meal, a lunch. And then during lunch, he served some very beautiful, delicious food, which is called the pig's delight. Now, that becomes a very controversial thing, right, among the Buddhists. So, after the Buddha ate it, he says, this is so good that it got to be, no, this food is only meant for people who are enlightened, Tathagata, only to the Buddha. So he wants Chunda to bury the food. That means don't serve the food to others. And I think he knew that the food was contaminated. It seems the pig's delight is a kind of pork. And it's cooked in a very nice way and very tasty. But unfortunately, the food is contaminated. And after eating the food, the Buddha got very sick. Sick of dysentery. And it became a very controversial point, because later on in Mahayana Buddhism, or in the 20th century especially, when people start to be very conscious of being vegetarian, they would try to tell people that the Buddha was a vegetarian. And I say, then people told him, what happens when the Buddha ate pork? He says, no, it's not pork. Pig's delight actually means a mushroom. Because pigs like mushroom, truffle. But of course, those people who argue that way did not know any doctors around you, or studying with doctors. You all know what happens when you get poisoning from mushroom or not? you get paralyzed straight away. That's how people die of mushroom poisoning. You know, whole body, I can't even talk. But the Buddha could go on and then walk so many miles to the side of a river before he died. Spend a few more days of dysentery before he died. So it means that the Buddha did not die of mushroom poisoning. So eventually that argument went away. And in doing so, you can see also the Buddha's compassion. He told Ananda, tell the monks not to blame Chunda, the fellow who gave the food, for poisoning him. He says, what he should do is, he has done a lot of merits and should be happy that he served the last meal to the Buddha. He should be happy about it. And just while he was sick, some people asked him, when you are dead, we can't see you anymore. So what are we supposed to do? Can you guess what the Buddha replied? You think make an image of me? No. What the Buddha told him, if you can't see the Buddha, then you can go and visit four places which reminds you of the Buddha. What are the four places? The place where he was born, the place where he attained enlightenment, the place where he taught the first sermon, and the place where he passed away. So traditionally, from the time onwards, these four places becomes the center of pilgrimage for the Buddha. He says, when you visit it, you must visit with a devout heart. That means when you do your pilgrimage, you must do it with a devout heart. Honest, pious heart. Not to go there because you got money, you go there for a tour, like what a lot of modern day Buddhists go. They go in, what I heard is, they go in air-conditioned bus, then go there, look, and then put some more money in the donation box, go to the next one. That is not devout Buddhism. You go there, you got to sit down and reflect on the things the Buddha did. And when you reflect on what the Buddha did, the Buddha actually is real in front of you. Then there is another part when Ananda asked the Buddha, I don't know why he asked it, I think it's because people tell Ananda that he got problem with women. Actually, it's not Ananda who got problem with women. It's the women have problem with Ananda. Maybe he's a very nice person, and the women like to go around him, always like to invite him to the house, you know, and so on. And so he got a lot of complaints from other monks. He says, this Ananda always go around women. No, he got problem. So Ananda asked what to do, how to behave towards women. But actually, I think that women sometimes, you know, can is a personification of temptations. Right? You ask any of those young people, girls are actually a temptation. Right? If they can't resist the temptation, they fall in love, isn't it? So it's not that the women are bad, right? But it's just that sometimes when people get too close towards temptations or women, there will be misbehavior. And monks are not supposed to misbehave. And Ananda tries not to misbehave. So the Buddha gave him some tips, as you call it. He says, try not to see them. I said, but if I got to see them, he said, try not to speak to them. Then you say, if I can't avoid speaking to them, then you know what the Buddha said? Exercise mindfulness. There you are. He didn't say kill the woman. He didn't say tell the woman they are rotten. Right? Exercise mindfulness. And that is why you can say the woman is not the thing. It's just temptations. Right? If you come across temptations, what should you do? Try to avoid temptation. But when you cannot avoid temptation, then practice mindfulness. And that's why mindfulness is so important in Buddhism. Right? So when he did that, then there are a lot of monks who are around the Buddha at the time when he's passing away. Right? He hasn't died yet, but the Buddha asked them, do you have any more doubts or not? And before that, a person came from far away and said, I want to become a monk. And that is a very popular Parinibbana story. He ordained the monk and then made him the last ordained disciple of him. Then after that, he uttered a few words, and these words are there for a lot of us to follow. He says, all conditioned things are subjected to decay. Strive on untiringly, or strive on diligently. Put in more effort in your practice. And got to understand that all conditioned things are subjected to decay. Whatever is conditioned, you, me, the cup, the tea, our emotions and all these things, they are subjected to rising and falling. That is in the Satipatthana Sutta. Watch all this, be mindful of this thing coming up, be mindful of these things going down, and not being attached to them. And that is the last teaching of the Buddha. And it's a very, very important teaching of the Buddha. And after that, of course, it described to you how the Buddha goes into the different state of trance, right? One jhana, two jhanas, up to the eighth one, and then finally, don't know where he went to. Nobody knows. Then after that comes the funeral. Before he passed away, a few weeks before he passed away, Ananda asked him, what to do? Number one is, when you are gone, who is going to teach us? Right, that's another part of the Parinibbana Sutta which we consider to be very important as well. He says, then the Buddha told him, if I'm not here, let you yourself be a lamp unto yourself, be an island unto yourself. Right? Through your practice, let you save yourself. And that is a very important concept of Buddhism. We don't depend on others to come and save us. Right? Practice. Through your practice, you will gain your enlightenment. Right? You cannot say other people practice and you get enlightenment. It doesn't happen that way. Right? When you are hungry, you ask me to eat, do you get full or not? There's law of nature. If you want a suntan, you say, Jim, go in the sun and strip yourself and get some suntan. Do you get a suntan or not? What you do, you get. Right? So when he passed away, they followed his instruction, they wrap him up in cloth and all these things. And of course there are a lot of mysterious things happening after he passed away, like all these religious teachers. When he passed away, when they wrap him up, preparing for the for the cremation, they tried to bring him out this way, but they cannot do it. Because the monk carry, they can't carry him out. And then Anuruddha, who is one of the disciples, always see funny things. They tell him, they say, because the gods won't allow you to do it, right? The divine things. So then he says, the divine things want you to go that way. So again, you know, when they went that way, they went out all right. And then the other thing is, when they want to light the funeral pyre, when they want to light the firewood, they can't light it for many, many times. And again, this guy, Anuruddha, he just saw it. He says, it's because the Buddha is waiting for the chief disciple called Kassapa to come and do it. So, and it so happened, now, like all good stories, Kassapa was passing around. So they got Kassapa, come and light it. So they lighted, and then eventually he was cremated. Now, according to the cremation, you guys remember, they used firewood those days. So no matter how much firewood you use, only the softer tissues will burn, right? The flesh, the skin will burn. And sometimes even the hair, because, you know, if the firewood don't get that area, the hair will just drop out and so on. So what's left behind, the soft tissues gone, only the bones left behind. So they collected, the people who are rulers of the country, collected all this in an urn, and then put there and honor the thing, right? That's why we got the sort of custom of honoring people's death relics. Then, that's not the end of it still. Then the other kings or the princes or the noble people of the same caste as the Buddha came and demanded part of it. So they nearly fought over it. They would say, I want it. They say, no. So you know, when you want something and the people don't give you, and you got the sword and the knives, you come out with it. So a clever Brahmin said, look, the master has been a very peaceful man throughout, and you don't fight over his dead bones. So what he did was, he tell them, okay, divide into 7 portions, because 7 of you are here. So divide the thing in 7 portions, and for him, because he's not one of those fight contenders, he got the urn. So they all got all these things and went back happily to the country and built stupas. You know what stupas are? The stupas are the modern day dagobas and pagodas and chetiyas and all this. And that's where they put the relics. And that's where we also, come to our days, we put the relics of holy people inside stupas. Right? And that's where the story ends. Any questions? I'm glad you're still awake.
Have you ever met anybody who thinks the Buddha can fly?
There are books of that.
Well, maybe you actually met somebody who thinks the Buddha
can fly. Yeah, you look into all this fantastic story of Buddhas. Not only can fly, can perform miracles.
Yeah, but since we'd actually believe that. They can write these stories, sure, but they're just fiction.
Well, there are people who believe that. They believe that they walk up to Buddha went up to heaven.
And I think they're in the wrong religion, because don't the Hindus claim Buddha as a god?
Yeah.
So they're in the wrong religion?
No, it's not right or wrong. It's just because they prefer to be that way. We can't say they're right or wrong because they want to think it that way.
So Buddha isn't a god.
No, but they can make a Buddha a god. They can make me a god. I'm too happy about it if somebody makes me a god, would I?
I think they regard Buddha as the reincarnation of Krishna.
Yeah.
So they are wrong.
You got the wrong, not necessarily wrong, but you got a different opinion of it. See the
very diplomatically. If they think the Buddha can fly, they're either wrong or wrong. Right.
Well, if people want to, you see, do people want to believe it's real, isn't it? To them, it's not wrong for them to believe that. I mean, for me, it's wrong to think that the Buddha can fly.
Yeah, I'm not arguing with their right to believe what they want to believe. That's right.
Well, if you think that human beings can fly without wings, then there are people who are look at very sort of different logics, right? And they say, okay, you know, to us, What is flying? Can a person really fly or not?
What do you think?
I personally think no.
Yeah.
I think if anybody can fly, show me they can fly. But even when a person can fly, if you look at the Buddhist state of mind, what do you think? I've told you all many times before in the past Dharma talks. If I see a person flying out there, right? Supposing I see a young man flying out there, if the Buddha, and if you practice your Buddhism, you say, somebody has flown out there. Who stop? But nearly all people, 99.999% of people will say, miracle! Isn't it? But to us, the actual thing is, I've seen the person flying. So you ask him, you say, oh, Buddha made me fly, Jesus made me fly. It doesn't matter, that's his story. But if you look at the Buddha's way of looking at things, a flying person has just gone by, finished, stop. Right?
Report what it is.
It is.
Report what it is.
Yeah. And you see what it is, understand what it is. You don't go there and speculate, oh, he must have some supernatural power. And that is what really make a lot of things happening in us. That's how people become superstitious. Now, I told you this story many times. Get a box of matches. Go back to the 11th century village of the Vikings. Okay, take the thing. What do the Vikings think of it? You are either a saint or you are a devil, isn't it? But come down 10 centuries later, there's nothing miraculous about striking a match, isn't it? It's because of our limited understanding. Therefore, we speculate and use a lot of all these ideas to enrich our imagination. So if I see tomorrow, if this statue of the Buddha would jump up and down here, right? What happens in a lot of mind of the Buddhists? You could have pay some more, right? Miracle, maybe pass my exams. But if you are really practicing Buddhist, you see, the thing just gone up and down, finished, full stop, isn't it? So that's how, you know, that's why the Buddha said it's because of our delusion and our ignorance, therefore we conjure up things. Right? It's not that we conjure up things, it's not that you don't conjure up this watch, but you conjure up ideas about this watch. This is a beautiful watch. Now go back to the explanation of our Satipatthana. When you're mindful, you know that this watch, okay. Jim is holding this watch. Now you are putting ideas into yourself. Some ideas possibly based on facts, but a lot of ideas, majority of the ideas are based on our imagination. So in the Chinese tradition, we call it Tian Dao Meng Xiang, Topsy Turvy, and our imagination. Right?
Yeah, I think you know Carl Sagan, he wrote a book about that, Enchanted World. The Enchanted World basically is looking at how people want to make the world more exciting by
being ideas. We try to make our life more exciting. Yeah. It's not the more exciting, it's just that we get ourselves more confused, isn't it? The more information you feed.
Some of these people, these ideas are.
No, the Buddha's idea, even here he was saying, perceiving form as form, perceiving sound as sound, perceiving taste as taste. How many times do we perceive form as form? This is a form, alright? Do we perceive it as a form or not? The cup, beautiful porcelain cup, blah, 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 right? The more you see, the more ideas you put in. But what is it? It's just a thing you can see, a thing you can, there's a dimension in it, there's a color in it, that's about it. But we don't resolve everything on this primary level. We tend to have a very sophisticated way and sudden imagination. Okay, look at this beautiful carp here. What kind of carp is it? Japanese one or Chinese carp? Right? A blue carp? No, blue carp don't exist. You see that? The carp here, the two fish here. So as we focus on, we try to put more and more things. And we call it imagination. But it becomes fantasy sometimes. And that's when it starts to become fantasy, then we got to be a bit more careful about it.
That's ignorance and delusion. That's ignorance and delusion.
The non-delusion way of looking at it is, this is a cup, finished. Even this is a cup, is already, we are value added to it. This is a thing, a form. What I say to you is a sound. But our convention is we got to make sense of the sound. So we try to understand what it is. Now, it's very important that way, because that's how ideas are transmitted. But try not to add too much value into it. And the values, if we are not careful, the values we add into the whatever we're listening or seeing or whatever, then sometimes we will end up in suffering. So it's there, perceiving form as form. No, it's very simple words. But do we really do it? When you see the fellow flying, it's just a flying person, finish. You got no more problems. Now you look at all the troubles in the world, it started by that difference in idea. Okay? When you see the man flying, okay, you think that, okay, that's Buddha did it. I see Jesus did it. I say it's God who did it. You say it's Sakya who did it. Then we start to have quarrel. Difference of opinion. Now, if our mind are all, we are not mindful, we keep on arguing to that, then we lose our friendship. And in big things, it actually adds to the conflict, adds to the problems. And that's why, for most of us, we sort of burden ourselves with a lot of burden. How many of you seen the painting of the Chinese painting, the Putai Hesang? The monk who carry a big sack, a big bag in the back. Now, you read the poetry which is on it. It says, when you walk, you put burden in. When you sit down, you put the burden in. When you lie down, you put the burden in. But when you put down the bag, no burden. But you see, we load ourselves with burden all the time. Look at something, okay, I like this, I don't like this. Why can't you really think this is just a watch? Or this is just, a watch on the table. You might say, is this Jim's watch? I think Jim is too poor to afford a gold watch like this. Ideas already. So this is the whole thing, all the teaching of what Buddha points to this. Now you might think that when you think of things in the primary level, it's not interesting. It's actually more interesting. Because you can see the true nature of things. Right? True nature of your ideas and so on. And that's why we stress on mindfulness meditation, because it leads you to that part of thing, to be able to perceive things that way. Right? Okay, any other questions? No?
Out of all the teachings in the sutta, which one do you think is the most important?
You want me to talk about a Buddhist point of view or from Jim Teo's personal ignorant point of view?
Maybe both.
Actually, when you asked me to talk about this, I was very happy. Because this is my favorite sutta. It tells, it reminds me of a lot, all the teachings of the Buddha when he preached. And then from there I say, okay, what page of the Samyutta Nikaya, what page of the Digha Nikaya, what page of the Majjhima Nikaya, go and read through the thing. And then from there, you can start to say, okay, all these are the informations the Buddha gave me. When I'm ready, I'll practice it. Right? So you can say that on this mindfulness and all these things, but when he talks about all these things, the Buddha, there's one actually, which talks of Buddha appearing from this side of the river to the other side of the river. Now, the story goes here. He says when the Buddha reached the side of a river, then he saw people busy making rafts, you know, and things to cross the river. But the Buddha, in one moment, he was there already. And he appears on the other side of the river. Miracle, isn't it? But there's a few lines of it which says down there, it says, for ordinary people, they still make the rafts and the boats. For the enlightened one, they are there already. It's just to tell you the truth of these few lines. We are still busy preparing for all these things, but enlightened people, they let go, they are there already. So it's a very simple teaching, very good teaching. And for me also, because I seem to like Ananda very much. Because it's just a very, very lovely and lovable character. He represents you and me. And that's why when the Buddha passed away, they all say that he's not enlightened. He's the only one which is close to the Buddha which is not enlightened. He reflects a lot of our human nature. He's attached to things. He got a lot of misunderstanding on the teachings of the Buddha. Now, one sutta before that is called the Mahanidana Sutta. Just one before this. And it's there, the Buddha told Ananda off. Ananda was one day, he was stretching his hand saying, oh good, I've already grasped the true meaning of dependent origination. And the Buddha heard him and said, don't say that, Ananda. Say not so, Ananda. You haven't. So that's how we are. We think that I think I know a lot of Buddhism. I can go and get away with you guys. But when I'm going to face the Buddha, I said, I still got a long way to go, isn't it? There you are. It makes you, you know. So when you say which part I like, I would say I like most of the part. But when it comes to talking about the Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, it becomes very real to me. But when you talk about the Buddha, well, when I was young, I think the Buddha is miraculous, you know, a supernatural character. But as you read through, you can find that, you know, he's getting close to you. In the past, the Buddha is up there. Now the Buddha is right here. So that is a very important thing to me. It's nothing spiritual about it, but it's actual fact. So I would recommend you to read this. It's a very beautiful way Maurice Walsh, the translator, has written. Beautiful. Just read it and see how the way it is. And some of the things they mentioned about the miracles and all these things, well, I don't believe in it, but it's good as a fairy tale. Yes.
Isn't that there's three suttas that we should have? So is this one of them?
No, that you got three nikaya, we call it. Nikaya means the discourses.
Right? So this book that combines three of them?
No, they're separate books. One is bigger, there's the longer ones. All of them are quite long. And in fact, the Parinibbana Sutta is the longest sutta in of all the suttas. And then the other is Majjhima Nikaya, which is the middle length saying. A lot of them have to deal with day-to-day practice. And then the other one you have is a Samyutta Nikaya, which is kindred saying, you know, group the thing. If a teacher talked to you about five aggregates, then you can go and look them up.
Are there a Chinese version? Like, what's the Chinese name?
Yeah, they got, but I don't know if you have it here. It's called Shi Chang Ching. I like for you. I don't remember how to write my Chinese anymore. How to write Chang? No. This is the whole way of writing. Right? Okay? You can get that. It's all in half classical Chinese. Right? Unless you are familiar with it, then.
Any more questions? Okay, so just wrap up the talk.